Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, before we start, letting people know that our Melbourne Comedy Festival show tickets are on sale. And this stage, the Melbourne Comedy Festival is still going.
Yeah, I mean, what day is it? It's currently Thursday evening. I would say we have about 12 hours left for you to purchase tickets, feel good about them, and then feel the need to return them when the corona quit hits.
So please go and buy Melbourne Comedy Festival tickets. I think we're about halfway sold. It's really great. We're going to have a great show. We've got the ARIA award-winning Bridie and White from Tonightly. We've got the Walkley award-winning Patricia Karvelis. We've got the Walkley award-losing James Colley, the multiple award winner Alice Fraser, DJ Dylan Bain will be there, and also Lewis and I. We've been nominated for many things. Like, you've been nominated for Most Hygienic Man.
That's true. I lost to... I've got myself into a pickle here. Who's a really hygienic person?
Mr. Sheen. There we go. Yeah, Mr. Thanks. Sheen. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about something completely different. And all of a sudden, you set me up with a real surprise. Anyway, the show will be better than that.
Yeah. We also have a Patreon, which we launched last week. So go to patreon.com/irrationalfear and give us some spare change, like $3 a month. Lewis and I have been doing Irrational Fear for about 8 years, and we decided this is the year we're going to go pro.
I want to get rich.
And a big thank you to the following people who are giving us $11 a month in total. What? Julia Polito, Patty McIntosh, Susan Kovra, and Tim Hughes for being our very first Patreon subscribers. That $11 is going to very good use. This episode of Irrational Fear is made on Gadigal land in the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Sovereignty was never ceded. Let's start the show.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra, fair dumb, and Section 40. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Today on Irrational Fear, in what appears to be not a marketing stunt for a Cavill Avenue nightclub, Tom Hanks has come down with coronavirus on the Gold Coast. He is undergoing social distancing with his volleyball wife, Wilson. Sorry, Rita Wilson. I didn't realise the ball had a first name. Anyway, okay. And Scott Cam says that earning $350,000 from the government for doing one appearance and four social media posts is his business. And a pretty good one. Minister for Employment, Michaela Cash, says that the government wanted Scott Cam because he's just a typical tradie that overquotes and underdelivers. And in the wake of coronavirus-related economic meltdown, the federal government has mercifully killed the surplus that never existed and is implementing a $17 billion stimulus package, including cash payments of $750 to people who can prove that they voted for the coalition. Stop picking your nose and touching your face. This is Irrational Fear.
Irrational Fear!
Yay! Woo! All right, welcome to Irrational Fear. Joining us tonight, our fearmongers include a writer, a performer, a bon vivant. It is Chris Taylor.
I think my bon vivant days are numbered now. Are you allowed to go to bars anymore, or is it all forbidden?
She is an ARIA award-winning satirist and raconteur. It is Bridie Connell.
Ooh la la. Thank you. Hi.
This is the most highbrow-sounding lineup on Irrational Fear ever.
Don't worry, we will ruin the illusion very shortly.
And he is a hand sanitizer connoisseur. It is Lewis Hover.
Can we just double check that this episode's recording, Dan?
Yeah, no, we are. I'm pretty sure we're recording.
Yeah. I don't mean to bring it up, but it's not the first time it's happened. Even just last week, we were here, and the show that we recorded was probably the there was no moments where I got a weird hygienic setup that I couldn't finish with a punchline. I was really knocking them down last week.
I actually thought it was the tightest Irrational Fear I've ever heard. Yeah. I think what's held the show back is that Dan has recorded them in the past. But when it's just silence, I find there's a slickness, there's a pace, there's an energy to them that's probably worth replicating on more than one occasion.
Well, I would love to thank you all for being here, and as a special gift, here is a roll of three-ply toilet paper.
Three-ply?
Yes, that's right.
That's just showing off.
We're not messing around here.
You can have a roll each, take that home, or give it to a loved one. Okay, a little later on in the show tonight, we'll be discussing this week's disappointing Democratic primary with presidential nominee Senator Bernie Sanders, so stick around for that. We also ask questions, the big questions, in fact, like what happened to that National Bushfire Recovery Fund? And we wade into the petri dish that is the coronavirus with what I should say is an interview with an actual epidemiologist who is the head of School of Public Health and Social Work at QUT. But first, we have a sponsor for today's show, someone who's done a bit of social distancing themselves.
Greetings, former subjects. Harry here, formerly known as Prince. Now, of course, Harry Mountbatten Windsor. Gosh, that's a mouthful. I don't know how the normies do it. Anyway, I'm a former distant heir to the throne of the British Kingdom, now full-time ruler of the @SussexRoyal Instagram account, and it's my pleasure to offer my family services to you. My wife and I are very good at the following. Our silver level service includes hours of inane chit-chat, cutting ribbons, looking at things, pointing at things. Or for a more premium service, try our gold level package. That's looking at things and pointing at things whilst doing inane chit-chat and cutting a ribbon. At this level, we can even kiss your baby, or for a little extra, you can kiss ours, if you like. But please, please don't ask me if I can dress up like a Nazi. That's platinum level, and you probably can't afford that. Well, maybe you can. Either way, let us know your budget. We're available for hire all year round, all around the world, so slide into our DMs today.
Terms and conditions apply. Baby kissing only available in coronavirus-free countries. Nazi uniform will be self-supplied and will be burned at the end of engagement.
I love, and look, I put my hand up, I've been guilty of this too, but if ever there was an example in comedy of you fuck one goat, it was Harry and the Nazi uniform. He comes from a family who were actual Nazis, and yet Harry, who just at a dress-up party once did it fleetingly, we're still, how many years on, 20 years on, still doing jokes about it?
Well, you know, I hasten to say this in a room full of comedians, but we've all done it. Sure.
I mean, not that, but we all have something. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was the goat fucking, but that's been out there.
Just one goat.
Yeah.
Well, it is. I don't know how you feel about this week, but it certainly feels like for the last week, it's been probably like reliving the first 5 minutes of a disaster movie over and over again. Like you turn on the radio and it's the end of the world. You turn on the TV, it's the end of the world. Of course, we're talking about coronavirus. How do you guys feel the zeitgeist is out there at the moment for corona-related material?
It's genuinely interesting, isn't it? Because I personally oscillate between being kind of quite concerned about it and thinking the world's gone completely batshit crazy. And I think, I don't know if there's a middle ground between those two or one of those positions is correct. It's certainly true that no one really knows how bad this is going to get, which is what makes it genuinely scary. I mean, I'm personally not really worried about dying or even getting ill, but I am worried about inconvenience.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because it's like in the disaster movies, it's like Jeff Goldblum running in and going, guys, like, I told you that this crazy virus was going to come and it turns everyone crazy and they turn into zombies. Whereas this, it would be Jeff Goldblum running in going, guys, it's a pretty bad cold. they'll get a pretty bad cold.
Could you please stay inside by yourself for 2 weeks, which is like my dream. But yeah, there's no like, you know, Jurassic Park theme. There's no epic kind of... Yeah, I want a bit more
That's what
drama.
We need a theme song for the coronavirus. I actually have some stings for this segment. I'm just going to play them as we go. Let me know what you think. They're pretty obvious.
No.
Yeah.
My corona! Yeah. There's a few things I hate about that.
And I'm gonna feeling that you're gonna tell us.
And let me list them. In fact, I'll just lead with number one. Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al Yankovic came out this week and said, please stop asking me to do my corona. Oh. You have touched a joke that Weird Al won't touch. That's now, where we are.
Before we recorded this, I actually said to Bridie, I've got these stings, and I'm pretty sure Bridie will like them, but Lewis will hate them.
That reflects so poorly on me. Look, I have to tell you something just as a quick aside off that. One of the things that I found really fascinating psychologically about this whole thing is the cabin fever that people are experiencing, being quarantined and, you know, isolated. For some people, it's just that two-week period, but in some places around the world, people have been in their apartments now for a couple of months, which obviously will have psychological effects. But there has been a My Corona song that was released, which gets progressively no bleaker as you watch it. There's all this content that's coming out. And look, I'm sure the four of us, we're all comedians. If we were isolated for months, we'd probably be like, yeah, time to launch a YouTube channel. Like, we'd do it.
That's what Irrational Fear is. I haven't had a job in years. So.
But it's interesting because a lot of the stuff that's coming out, you know, started very funny and sharp and is getting progressively weirder as the cabin fever really
starts. I think that's the story of Corona. I think, you know, Corona, the coronavirus 19, we've all been seeing the story. It did start off quite benign. It's like, oh, it's in China. Yeah. Oh, it's another place. Oh, it's another place. Oh, now it's here. But in Italy, the death rate is significant. Like, it's something like 80%.
Can I just say, has there ever been a better time to go to Italy? we've all been there. Well, I assume a lot of people have been there. And the queues to get into the Duomo, to San Marco Square in Venice, or to see the cathedral in Florence. I reckon if you went now, sure, there's a risk of picking up a germ. But imagine the convenience of getting straight into some of the world's greatest sights with no other crowds in the way. You could have a gondola sing to you through a flu mask. I reckon you should
cash in. You should set up the, you know, your tour, exclusive tour.
Right. I go on a Chris Taylor chaser tour of Italy.
Make it a cruise. They're going well, though.
I've got another sting.
COVID-19.
Oh. What was that one?
COVID-19.
What? Hey? That is my mum's good luck song, and now you've ruined it for me and my whole family.
I've already started judging people who call it COVID-19. You know, like, there's two types of people. Those of us, I'm still a bit old school, I go with coronavirus. I reckon there's people now, when you're at barbecues or wherever, trying to sound a bit more medical, like as if, I've done a bit more reading. I've read The Lancet this week, COVID-19. Do you use the Latin to describe your dog and call it caninus lupus? No, of course you don't. It's fucking coronavirus, stick to it.
It's the person who comes back and goes, I just came back from Istanbul.
COVID, corona to my friends.
Of course, if you stop calling it coronavirus, Dan can't do half his puns about the Marsha Ryan stuff. So please, for the sake of Dan.
He's still got COVID-19.
I do have one more.
I'll save it for a little later. You don't need to.
Right around the world, a lot of things are being cancelled. The NBA is being cancelled.
Cancel culture's gone too far.
One NBA player last week was at a press conference and joked that he had coronavirus and then at the press conference touched all the microphones. That was last week. This week, he's been diagnosed with coronavirus. Conferences have been cancelled. Mona's Dark Mofo has been cancelled.
Hipster's going to swim in the nude in winter now.
Coachella has been postponed. South by Southwest was cancelled. The release of James Bond has been moved to the end of the year. Well, that's really interesting because if it was just a normal theatre release from a normal studio, it would just go out. But like, because MGM has one film franchise and they bank the house on it, they've got to move it to the safe
spot. Also, I heard a rumour that is completely unfounded. So I really must stress that this might not be true. But that the plot line is loosely pandemic based.
Oh, really? Oh. Right. Wow.
Gee, that's
awkward. Oh, wow.
I actually woke up on the weekend and I was like, oh, I feel a bit sick. So I'm like, oh, God. So I stayed in and was like flicking through Netflix. And all of the top films over the weekend were like Contagion. Yeah. And like, wow. People are just staying at home watching like what they think of as now documentaries.
They've gone viral.
Did that happen during the AIDS epidemic? Like, was everyone just watching Philadelphia as well?
Well, they can't now. Tom Hanks is he's stuck inside.
Yeah. There's one event in France that continued, Bridie, that you noticed.
There is. Look, I love this story. I kind of think it's quite inspiring, which is absolutely not the angle that most media have taken to this story. But in a town in the northwest of France, they're, you know, despite all of the advice of the local health bodies to stay at home and to maintain, you know, distance and a bit of social isolation and be very careful and hygienic and not to congregate, almost 4,000 people came out dressed as Smurfs to break the world record for the amount of people dressed as Smurfs at one time.
Oh, worth it.
They're just reckless defiance in the face of this adversity, and I love it because I feel like if the world is ending, let's go out being the weirdos that we are, doing the things that we love.
Perfect. So, don't, even if you don't break the record for the most amount of Smurfs, you probably would break the record for the most amount of dead Smurfs.
Yeah. See, silver lining always.
Or blue lining.
The experts are recommending hand washing and social distancing. Chris, as someone who dated for a very long time, you've got some good tips on social distancing.
Well, first of all, I hadn't heard this phrase social distancing until this week. It sounds, if ever there was a phrase that sounded very euphemistic, it sounds like something the Nazis would have done during the Holocaust. It said, oh, but no, we didn't gas those Jews. We socially distanced ourselves from them. I love the coronavirus.
Wow. Wow, that's a fresh, that is a fresh angle.
I'm happy to be the Bettina Arndt of this panel and take a contrary view to what's socially acceptable.
You are chasing that away.
Oh, my God. I'm going to call the Academy of Television and remove those logies that you've got.
Anyone who has a slightly antisocial streak will probably understand. Look, for years, we've had to come up with excuses when we don't want to go to your shitty play or your annoying birthday party that's in an incredibly inconvenient location. Mm. I've had to kill relatives just to pretend I've got a death in the family. Now, it's so easy to not go anywhere. You simply say, coronavirus.
Yeah, it's so funny you led with shitty play because out of the four of us here, how many plays have you written? I remember getting invites to several of those. And it was actually very easy for me to say I wasn't going.
Back then, we didn't have a virus to rely on. There wasn't a good virus. So you can't say SARS because it's in Asia. MERS was in the Middle East.
Exactly.
But now we've got our very own.
We've got our own, and I'm milking this. Like, I'm really hoping it's hanging around for a long time. Because for antisocial sort of smoke bombers like me, perfect opportunity to lock yourself up and never see anyone.
I was half expecting a text tonight saying, sorry, can we do this via phone?
Look, it's... The thing about, I mean, I don't know, a lot of us probably do work from home as freelancers, so it's not unusual to us. I've got a lot of friends who have been getting serious sort of emails or lectures from their bosses encouraging them to work from home. A good friend of mine works on the great ABC show Mad as Hell, and they had a serious discussion yesterday, apparently, that they're going to continue without a studio audience.
Wow.
Now, I don't know.
At what point? From next week?
Well, they're just weighing it up. They're just sort of monitoring it, as everyone is. Like, I know the Sydney Writers' Festival is weighing it up.
Ellen's nixed her audience in America, and I know there's not a lot of people in the audiences for Colbert and Seth and all those folks.
Is Ellen still bringing out anyone from YouTube? Like, are they still allowed on? Is there some, like, kid who did a dance on a horse still allowed to turn up?
Imagine if you were that kid who wore bright sneakers to school that day and you had a TikTok that blew up and then you went to Ellen to go on Ellen and there was no one in the audience to celebrate your piece of popular culture.
The warm-up guy, even if there's not an actual... Like, is he still contractually...
That would be a union job, sir. That would be a union job. Warming up whether there's somebody or not.
If a tree falls in the woods, warm-up guy makes a joke. Yeah. You ask a philosophical question here.
Yeah. I mean, I've done comedy shows with a very thin audience.
Well, it's a good excuse for the comedy festival because no one's going to come to the Irrational Fear show, and now at least we can blame it on something else.
Oh, it sounds a lot like, oh yeah, actually last week's episode was the best one ever. It just wasn't recorded.
Well, this week's episode
nightly, didn't you? You know what it's like to perform without a studio audience,
or without a TV audience, actually, without any.
The other one that just cracks me up, even though it's awful, is sport. You mentioned the NBA. Italy's banned all its soccer fixtures, all like professional matches. Not the matches, just the audience.
Yeah.
So there's two things I love about this. One, Do they still sing the anthem?
They do. No, last night, the Matildas, the Australian soccer team, qualified for the Tokyo Olympics against Vietnam in Vietnam. Right. They played to an empty stadium. They sat out and sung the anthems to begin with.
Okay, this is my question. Because normally I reckon a lot of athletes really rely on the crowd to do the heavy lifting. They can't sing for shit. Most of them don't know the words. How do they go when there's no one around them?
They seem to do okay, yeah. But also it was a very wide shot. So they didn't do the full cut-ups on the lips. I couldn't judge.
And then the second thing that I'm looking forward to, especially in the European soccer leagues, is goal celebrations. How much do you really feed off the energy of the crowd? Yeah. Like, if you're doing a backflip and getting your shirt off and doing... Mm. Do you still do that when you know there's no one there to see it?
Mm. Yeah, man, now you just kick it in and go, oh, got one.
Yeah. Go, Mark, start again.
Go on, let's go back to the middle. All right, let's go again. All right, I got one more sting.
Yes. Oh, no.
She put the bat in the pangolin and ate it all up. She put the bat in the pangolin. The whole thing up. She put the bat in the pangolin and ate it all up. She put the bat in the pangolin and ate the whole thing up. Doctor, is there nothing she can take? I said, doctor, to relieve this baby.
Huh? I'm sorry, I just remembered I actually have to go. Yeah.
No!
I don't even know what that song is, but I do know that Weird Al put out a poster the saying if anyone does a parody of that...
Wash your hands and refrain from releasing parody songs.
A little later on, we'll have Bernie Sanders and he'll be discussing what he went through for the Democratic primaries. But soon we'll be discussing when a national bushfire recovery fund isn't a national bushfire recovery fund. But right now, he's a real expert on coronavirus. It's friend of the show, epidemiologist Professor Hilary Bambrick.
Thanks, Dan.
Now, how is COVID-19 for you as someone who's an epidemiologist? I assume that it's like Christmas for epidemiologists. Is that right?
Well, thankfully, I'm not that kind of epidemiologist, so I'm quite well protected. I get to sit at my desk and look at numbers and patterns, but there are some epidemiologists out there who are actually doing what we call applied epidemiology, where they're out in the thick of it, in amongst it.
Now, broadly speaking, we hear a lot of so-called experts on 2GB and Sky News tell us what we should be thinking about when it comes to coronavirus. On Fox News, they're even downplaying COVID-19 to maybe what could be seen to be dangerous levels of reporting, to kind of minimising the threat. Where do you think the happy balance is in communicating the dangers of coronavirus-19?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because it is something that for many people won't actually be a serious infection. But for a large number of people in the community, they are actually at increased risk. So if you're older, if you have a number of what we call comorbidities, you know, chronic disease going on, if you're immune suppressed, then it is actually pretty serious. So I guess, you know, it's not a serious issue for you personally if you're not one of those people, but we all actually have a part to play in terms of protecting everyone else around us. And I have to say that I'm not sure whether to be heartened or terrified by the absence of soap on the supermarket shelves when I was shopping the other night, because it made me wonder, you know, while it's great that people have got the message that hand washing is good, but it made me wonder, what were they doing beforehand?
Exactly. I mean, I'm such a big nose picker myself. I've had to put restrictions on the times I pick my nose. You know, I make sure I get a good pick in after I do some hand washing, after I sanitize my hands. But I assume that would be bad anyway, because I'm sure there's diseases that my nose has already trapped and they're just going straight into my fingers.
Well, and from a public health perspective, I ask you on behalf of Australia to also sanitize your hands after you've picked your nose as well, Dan.
Right. Okay. I'm only thinking about myself. Always thinking about myself. Now, you actually made a good point about thinking about for folks who may have symptoms or may be concerned about their own health, to think about the people in their lives who may be more vulnerable. What kind of things do you think people should be considering?
Well, certainly if you're unwell, do stay away from other people. Avoid going to work where you can. Look, nobody's indispensable from their job, and your colleagues are not going to thank you if you make them sick. And this is a message I give out to my staff every flu season as well. You know, if you're sick, please don't turn up. If you've been asked to self-isolate, don't go and do a mad rush last-minute shop at your local supermarket. I mean, we've seen that happening. Please just ask somebody else to go get you, hunt down some toilet paper for you, or hand sanitizer, or whatever it is that you need, tin of baked beans. But don't go out and do it yourself. So if you, you know, do take this seriously. The whole idea at this stage is we're very unlikely to actually stop the coronavirus in its tracks and have it, you know, it is something that is going to be much more widespread in the community. So the whole plan at the moment is to avoid that massive peak of infection. And basically, we don't want to overwhelm the health system. So the whole idea is to sort of spread out the rate at which people are getting infected, slow it down so that our health system can actually cope.
You're on the Climate Council as well. Is there any correlation or what's the link between diseases and pandemics like this and a warming planet? Is there any?
Look, I wouldn't say so for coronavirus, but there is some indication that you know, the ambient temperature and humidity and so on may play a part in how some diseases are transmitted, including coronavirus, but I'd say it's very early days yet to say what that might be. Of more concern is that, you know, it seems to be more readily transmitted where people are, you know, hanging around indoors, for example. So we'd see similarly with flu season that it's actually sort of the colder months that are of risk at greater risk in terms of where people are hanging out, more.
What you're saying, Hilary, is that our Melbourne Comedy Festival show in 3 weeks' time is going to be a fantastic incubator for not only culture of comedy, but culture of coronavirus. I understand. What's one interesting stat about COVID-19 that you've been wowed by over the last few weeks of looking at this virus take hold around the world?
Something that's impressed me the most is that infection numbers and numbers of people dying are actually declining in China, for example, while we're seeing sort of massively increasing rates of infection and people dying in Italy as another sort of contrasting example. And I guess thinking about the ways that we manage these sorts of things, the rules put in place in China to sort of, you know, really lock places down seem quite extreme, but they do actually work. Like, quarantine is something that does actually work. It's sort of, you know, tried and true way of stopping spreading infection.
I can't imagine that laissez-faire attitude of your average Italian would go go down so well with being locked down.
Well, and the kissing and the hugging too.
Oh yeah,
right?
The double kissing. You have doubled the chance of getting coronavirus because you're the continental way.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, is it a crazy idea to stockpile toilet paper?
Or comedy festival tickets perhaps might be a...
It's not a crazy idea to stockpile comedy festival tickets. In fact, you can use your comedy festival ticket if you get it mailed to you as toilet paper before you come see the show.
That's right. Look, I think it shows how unimaginative Australians are when it comes to wiping our asses or cleaning our asses. So, you know, Italy's not suffering, for example, from a shortage of toilet paper, are they? Because they've all got their bidets in their bathrooms instead of toilet paper. And look, you will find on the internet, if you're feeling a little bit inclined that you prefer a little bit of a wash rather than a wipe, there are instructions on the internet on how to convert your own toilet into with a sort of a bidet attachment. It's basically, you know, a bit of a hose and a squirter gun and away you go.
That's great. I like the idea that people's houses are going to have shortage of garden hose, but not for making bongs, but for making bidets sometime soon. Let's go. Oi, what are you doing? You're making a bong? No, I'm making a bidet. Leave me alone. Got to wash my bum. Oh, God. Is there one tip you want to impart to people, one bit of advice you want to impart to people before you go?
Oh, yeah, well, maybe a couple, actually. I guess wash your hands. Get your kids to wash their hands. Don't maybe stop shaking hands. You can do the fist bump instead. Or, you know, some of us were talking about doing the butt bump, but that might be a bit overly familiar for some people. And I guess, just be courteous, be kind. Not everyone's got an amazing immune system, and this will be something that affects people.
I had a lady, I was walking down Oxford Street 2 days ago and I stroked my beard subconsciously and a lady kind of like rushed 10 metres towards me and said, thank you so much in a sarcastic way and then stroked her own face. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I just stroked my beard unintentionally. You intentionally stroked your face by making fun of me for stroking my face. Do you think people just need to relax?
You probably find you actually stroke your beard about 30 times an hour without realising.
I've been arguing, my partner loves my beard, but I've been arguing with her that I should shave it off because I would probably touch my face less.
Well, you might find it so smooth and delightful that you touch it more.
Understandably for her, I look better with it because without it, I'm just extremely fat. It really hides my double chin. Thanks, Professor.
No worries. Thanks, Dan.
The most extraordinary flirt piece interview I've ever heard. Like, you were flirting with her while talking about how much your wife loves you.
Yeah.
Not to brag, but I look really bad without my facial hair.
And nothing better than bringing up a weight issue with someone who can't see you as well, because she's like, I'm not going to comment on that, Dan.
She was refusing.
She did well. Very smart.
Your anecdote, though, about the person in the street.
Yeah. It
is true, but there are some very jittery people out there.
The passive aggressiveness out there is out of control.
I had the most extraordinary little encounter this week. This might be a slight overshare, but I'd just been to a pathologist for some fertility testing, and they'd given me this little cup, and it was sort of in a very medical-looking bag. And after I'd left with it, I went into the corner shop. And this man just...
That's not where you're meant to fill it. That's not where you're meant to...
If you're masturbating in a corner shop...
We all have our rituals. You know, I just get
Chris,
off
I've
there.
Been to it recently. I'll give you some tips.
I find just the whole wall of Pringles in the corner shop is very arousing, so I like to go there. But he just saw me carry anything looking vaguely medical and immediately assumed coronavirus and ordered me to get out of the shop.
Really?
Oh, really?
And I just had the perfect comeback. I just sort of embarrassed him and go, no, I need to masturbate into this jar. I assure you, I'm happy not to do it in your shop, but I assure you it's nothing corona-related. And but just the smallest thing that looks vaguely medical is now assumed to be corona.
I don't know. I reckon given that visual, I would ask you to leave.
I'm thinking of asking you to leave right now.
A rational fear.
And I haven't touched my face in weeks. In weeks.
Back in January 6th, Scott Morrison stood at a press conference and announced a national bushfire recovery fund of about $2 billion. But this week, in Senate estimates, it was discovered that it didn't exist. Lewis, this is your favourite story of the week.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's my favourite. I found it quite chilling, if I'm honest. Like, I think that the coronavirus, obviously it's taking up all of our time and all of the media. It could not have come at a better time for Scott Morrison, really. Like, all of the things that it is glossing over, mm-hmm. the sports rorts, Angus Taylor, and now they basically, if you just catch up on the story, he was under a lot of pressure. The whole Hawaiian crisis was there, and he just stood up and was like, well, we're going to give $2 billion to the bushfire.
And put out an ad.
Yeah, that's right. They put out that crazy ad, which potentially
made... People said, oh, he's back from holiday, he's doing something, he's given $2 billion, maybe he's got this.
Yeah, and so then they went through Senate estimates, and there's a revised budget here. We're just looking for this $2 billion, with a B, billion dollars that you promised, and we can't see it. And the response from the coalition was, well, it's a notional fund, which they then dug into. Notional meaning speculative, theoretical, or only in the mind, which is truly there was notional there was a notional surplus. Notional emergency funding, like it's like Schrodinger's funding. If you look at it, it disappears.
Feel like we're being gaslit. Like I feel like I dated this government in my early 20s. That's what I feel like.
I totally told you I was seeing someone else, right?
Brian Adams of government.
I notionally proposed to you.
Yeah. It's stunning.
It's absolutely outrageous.
In any other time, this would undo a government. And right now, the fact that he's been able to go, well, I've just promised another $17 billion, and you're like, well, have you?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't even know.
Will you? Yeah. Will it extend out to $22 billion? And journalists are on his case about it. And every question they pit against Angus Taylor and sports frauds, he just goes, no, we're not dealing with that. We've got to deal with corona right now. Mm. And corona becomes the thing that he can totally get rid of any other question about anything.
I mean, I was saying how good corona is for antisocial people, but for governments with something to hide, it is amazing. I mean, this can't last long enough for this government. It's the only thing that probably is going to, you know, save him in the eyes of the Australian people. Trump, by contrast, who you'd think, who, you know, has got his own problems with them just having survived an impeachment, You'd think he'd want to go full on scare, fearful with it, but he's sort of gone the opposite direction, bizarrely, and sort of pretending there's nothing to see here.
And I think there's a major problem there because Fox News are doing the same. They're like copying him and kind of saying, minimizing the threat to the point where it's dangerous because the only people that watch Fox News are old people, and they're the most vulnerable people, most at risk from dying of corona. And if they don't think it's a real issue, then they're going to be dead.
If old people start dying, it's going to be bad news for the coalition because they won't have any voters. The only other people it's really going to affect is the ABC. There'll be no one left to watch it. Gardening Australia will just be, Costa will just be watching it at home himself. I mean, Grand Designs, you know, who's watching Grand Designs if corona takes out everyone over 65?
Well, one person who's very clearly upset with corona and other things in his world is Senator Bernie Sanders, and I spoke to him earlier this week. Joining us now from his Vermont headquarters is Democratic presidential candidate, Senator Bernie Sanders. Senator Sanders, have this week's results at all diminished your enthusiasm at all for this presidential race?
You know what? My enthusiasm has not diminished at all. There is still work to be done. I'm just excited. I still have a job with medical benefits that will see me through this coronavirus outbreak.
Well, Senator, good luck out there, and I hope you don't get infected.
Well, you know what? I cannot possibly get infected, Dan, because I have the vaccine.
Oh, I didn't know there was a vaccine.
Well, of course there's a vaccine. You make a virus, you make a vaccine.
Hang on. Senator, are you saying that you invented coronavirus?
Look, let me be clear, Dan. Let me be very clear. This is Plan B. B for Bernie. I didn't want to enact it, but the mainstream media, MSNBC, CNN, the DNC, they made me do it. Coronavirus will be the biggest wealth redistribution policy of the last 100 years. You see, it disproportionately affects the older generation. 99% of the 1% are 100% old as fuck. You understand? Excuse my language. It's simple. The boomers will get sick, and their money will trickle down to the younger generations, to the working people. All of the countries in Europe are doing it. It's very big in Italy, in Iran, and China.
Those last countries aren't actually in Europe, Bernie. Well,
neither is the United States of America. Let's not forget that. Now, this is a message to the DNC and the superdelegates out there. You're all listening? You want to live? Let democracy take hold. The person who gets the most votes should win. A vote for Bernie is a vote for a universal vaccine. I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approve this message.
Well, Bernie, I think for all our sakes, I hope you are the Democratic nominee.
Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate the call.
Thank you, Bernie.
Well, thank you very much for joining us for Irrational Fear once again. It's very awesome of you to make your way in here despite the coronavirus.
I'd say that too. I just want to apologise that I've used up the entire toilet paper. I haven't had any for the last 2 weeks, so just thank you for humouring me while I wipe 2 weeks' worth of shit from my ass during this podcast.
We are back weekly until our comedy festival show, so please head to our Patreon, give us a few bucks to make this show happen. It costs us quite a bit of time and some money every week to get it done.
We're working harder than Scott Camp, I can say that much.
That's right. Yeah, we've already put out 2 shows. And
We recorded more, but 2 out.
Special thanks to Rupert Dagas, Jacob Round, FBI Radio, and our fear monks tonight, Lewis Hobber, Chris Taylor, Bridie Connell. Do you guys have anything to plug?
No, just my ass.
heaps of guest spots and shows that will probably be cancelled in Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
No, Dan. I'll be back next week, and I'm on radio every day. You can listen, but I don't need to plug it, you know? Listen or don't.
How cocky does he say? I don't need to plug my radio.
Well, I mean, what am I going to say? 3 p.m., Triple J, listen in. I don't know.
You pay for it. You might as well listen to it.
You don't need to Patreon. We tax you.
In the meantime, there's always something to be scared of. Good night.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.